Hey guys, Toolman Tim here. Welcome back to the workshop where we create community, find freedom, promote preparedness, and share success. It's January 2nd, 2022, and this is episode number 52 of the workshop podcast. Tonight, we're going to deal with a grab bag of social media feedback. I've got some cool tips from the community. I've got some questions, some answers, and a really neat story that one of our community members shared with me through email. So we're going to discuss that. But first, just a couple of quick announcements to get out of the way, like always. Excuse me. All right. So this Thursday, we will be back with the very first preparedness episode of 2022. That'll be live here on YouTube, on Float, on Odyssey, and audio only on Prepper Broadcast Network. Really excited about that. We're going to talk about home heating solutions, problems, and how to solve them. Second, if you guys haven't heard yet, I know I've been bragging about it on social media absolutely everywhere, but a week from this Tuesday, we will be launching a brand new collaborative podcast. It's going to be a roundtable kind of discussion called The Fireside Freedom. We're going to have chats about whatever it happens to be. It's going to be freedom-minded, positive kind of stuff with a whole bunch of eight fellow content creators. So keep an eye out for that. I'll have links in the description below so you can follow up, check out the different social media accounts for it and keep an eye out. That's coming up a week from this Tuesday at 7 p.m. Central Time. If you are one of the people that are still using Facebook, I recently split my Facebook page for what was my All Seasons Maintenance handyman Facebook page, whatever you want to call it. Anyway, the Toolman Tim's workshop stuff had really taken over that, and I wanted to have a separate presence for each one. So I decided to split them, and there is a brand new Toolman Tim's workshop Facebook page. So the link will be in the description after the show tonight. If you're interested, if you're still a Facebook user, because there's still a big community over there, and I wanted to make sure that that kind of stuff was split and available. And finally, this one's really cool. If you guys are Float users, and if you've ever seen, there's a couple of channels over there that are always on. These guys do some incredible work. And the one is Studio 8424. And they just launched a new program, service, whatever you want to call it. And it's going to be called, or it is called, radio8424.com. Basically what it is a low bandwidth internet radio that is an always on station that you can check from Bluetooth speakers, from your internet equipped radios in your car, that kind of stuff. And it's going to be an always on stream of freedom minded creators, people who support Float and are on there all the time. And it's a pretty big honor. They're going to be carrying the workshop podcast there as well. So if you're ever out and about and you want a really low data usage kind of audio stream to check out, go to radio8424.com. So yeah, there. So that is that. That gets the announcements out of the way. So how has everybody been? It's been a, hey, know your Joe. How are you? We had a wonderful New Year's, which we chatted a little bit about on the January 1st impromptu live stream. That was awesome. Thanks, guys. Huge support there. I didn't expect it. I didn't tell anybody it was coming up. And we just did it, ran with it, and it was a lot of fun. So I haven't seen him in here yet tonight, but you guys know Chris Dixon. You see him in here all the time. He's a fellow Flatlander here in Alberta. I've actually met him in person, which is really cool. He sent me an email before Christmas, and I told him I wanted to use it in a show, but I had everything kind of booked up until after the new year. So I figured let's start out with a little story that he sent to me, like I said, a couple weeks back, three, 4 weeks back through email. So he said, we've had some fairly extreme winds down here lately. Couple that with some grass and brush fires, things could get out of hand fairly quickly. They haven't, thank you firefighters, but the way that people have reacted to certain situations has really got me thinking. When we talk about bugging out, we talk about knowing your route, knowing where you would go and a couple of ways to get there, but we don't really talk about the most basic thing, and that is to know where the hell you are on the planet, like your actual location and its proximity to all other areas. Story time, he says. I met a lady at a local gas station yesterday as I was grabbing a snack and some fuel. She had her horse trailer on and her truck was full of stuff. And I asked her, where was she heading? I know her and I know she's a pleasure rider that does some competition stuff in the summertime. Not really the right time of the year to be hitting the road. Thought it was kind of strange. She said that she had to get her horses moved and clean out her little barn that she rents about 5 minutes west of town because there was a wildfire alert that a brush fire was heading in our direction. She was really panicked. I'd gotten the alert too, and the fire was burning way back in the forestry, about an hour and a half north and west of us. And if you guys know, well, anyway, yeah, we kind of pay attention to where things were and wind and that kind of stuff. So we were on the outer edge of the alert zone. We did get the alert, however. And Chris says here that it took him about 10 minutes to talk her down from the hysteria, explaining that the fire was heading away from us and it would take an absolute miracle for it to change directions and come their way. So what did he say? He said, keep an eye on the alert system and maybe keep her trailer on the truck if it helped her feel more prepared. But he said, it got me thinking about how many people have absolutely no clue where they are on this planet. I mean, I know that there are people in the cities that never ever leave their communities unless they have to go back to the hospital or have to go to the hospital. But when a rural person shows this level of cluelessness, it really took me by surprise. There's so much to unpack in this, but I really appreciate Chris is one of the best guys for sending quality content. And if you guys ever have something you think deserves a look in a show, or you want me to maybe share a story, or if you have questions, just email them, therealtimcook@gmail.com. That's the easiest way to get a hold of me, or social, whatever. Anyway, so let's unpack this, right? So this lady, she's sitting there and she's absolutely panicked because what did she do? She only read a little portion of the story. And you get this all the time. You know, people are like, oh my goodness, did you see we got a blizzard coming, or there's a fire coming, or, you know, we're under a snowfall warning. And then you look and it's like, well, no, we're actually not. It appears that the, if you look on the map, that the fire is a couple hours north of us. And if you know your prevailing winds in this area, the chances of it ever coming down toward you are slim to none. Now, that doesn't mean don't be prepared, but it does mean don't overreact. Don't act like an absolute idiot when it comes to something like this. You know, panic kills, right? So this lady was absolutely beside herself, probably had no plan in the world. All she knows is she has these expensive horses that she wants to take care of. And all she read on her phone or her text message alert, whatever it happened to be, was, oh my God, there's a fire coming. She didn't bother to take two more minutes, you know, because it's not going to be there right away anyway, even if it were, but take two more minutes to read a little bit, to look at a map and say, okay, where is it now? Because first off, if it was heading toward you, well, then it would tell you which direction to go, right? You know, yeah, head west, you know, southwest to get below and behind it. So you don't have an issue there. Or, you know, also, if you live in dry country where there's a good chance that there could be a fire and you have horses, and, you know, even just doing the mental exercise of sitting down and saying, well, if this ever happened, where would I go? Because this lady was absolutely lost. And unfortunately, that seems to be, you know, 95, 99% of people's mindset is, well, the government will take care of me for starters. You know how I feel about that. But beyond that, like, just have a plan, you know, and it doesn't need to be much. Like, you don't need to have, you know, 17 different roads out of town and, you know, pre-booked hotels and all this, but, you know, just know, like, okay, well, an hour or two in one direction or the other, know where you can go, maybe drive through that area sometime, find some pasture and just knock on a farmer's or a rancher's door and just say, listen, if there's ever a fire and I ever need to evacuate, would it be possible to come down here? And I mean, really, you've got the horse trailer. They can stay in there for quite a while. So you just need to get out of Dodge for a bit. But this lady just had no clue what she was going to do, where she was going to go. And yeah. And then the other thing that really jumped out at me with this story was, practice, right? So first off, have a plan, know where you're heading, know how to get out of Dodge, know where to go. But beyond that, practice, you know, and I don't mean like drive right out of town or anything, but, you know, again, like if you have dogs, for instance, or cats, like practice rounding them all up because they can be little assholes, and get them into their cat carriers or the dog carriers, or get the horses in the horse trailers and get your trailer on your trailer hitch, get hooked up and get ready to pull out and just see how long it takes you. Have a list, you know, of the things you need, whether it's, you know, mineral for your horses or dog food for your dogs or whatever it happens to be, right? But yeah, you know, just Man, I don't know. You hate to see people overreact, but that sometimes I think the panic that either the media or, you know, even just the weather station, sometimes they just, they have to get it out there. They have to be the first one to break some kind of story. And they, and if you just take a minute and look, well, you know what? It might not be as bad as you think it is, but if it is, then go, but have a plan ahead of time, because we've talked about this before about bugging in versus bugging out. And if you plan ahead of time and you know where you're going, it's going to make the decision to go that much easier. So anyway, those are my thoughts on that story. Thank you, Chris, for sending that in, because that to me was just, it was a good example of somebody who really isn't prepared and just was flying by the seat of their pants and thought, oh my God, fire, I need to go. And yeah, so from there, anyway, plan, prepare, and then practice, I guess, right? Yeah, look at those, three P's, alliteration. So this is going to be a hodgepodge all over the place. If you guys haven't, well, most of you follow me on social anyway, but this is the time of year to really, well, in between Christmas, they always mark down all the Christmas stuff, right? And absolutely, right? And now, something that not everybody thinks about is simply the fact that white Christmas lights can make a really, really good backup light emergency kind of system. And if you can buy them for half price or 75% off, all the better for you. Howdy, Sunnyland camper. I don't know why I always have trouble with that one. And Know Your Joe says, good story. It appears that most fly by the seat of their pants. You know, and there's occasionally one person that can do that properly, but nope, not me. I was listening to Jake today on Ravenwood Acres. He was talking about his word of the year, and he's military, and he was talking about having contingency plans for contingency plans. And you know, obviously I'm not military, never been, but I certainly like to have a contingency plan for my contingency plan. So yeah. Anyway, so yeah, Christmas decorations, guys, or lights, really. That was a big post, and I had a lot of responses. Alex, one of the employees from Float, he had a kind of a mobile tent setup that he uses his lights in there for that. And remember, these LEDs, they're super low wattage, so it doesn't take a lot of power. You know, they're a slow drinker for the amount of power that they take. And yeah, so anyway, the wife and I and the girls, we went out for New Year's Eve and we stopped to Walmart, and lo and behold, this is almost a week after Christmas, and they still had a metric shit ton of white LED Christmas lights. I bought three strands of 62 feet long, 300 lights per strand. I don't even know what I'm going to do with them all yet, but I have them. Regular $30, I got them for 15, which wasn't horrible. However, then, you know, that was my thing. I said, look for lights. And then Chez Rad, I think they're Shea Rad, I don't know, on Float said, also look for heavy duty extension cords, splitters, power bars, all of that. Doesn't matter if it's candy cane color, forest green, Santa Claus red, whatever. You know what? In a pinch, you're not going to care what color the power bars, the extension cords, whatever it is. But one other person mentioned too, and this is important, pay attention, because don't waste your time on those stupid little green and white extension cords that are like 18 gauge that'll burn up if you try to put anything more than like 10 watts through them. So look for something heavy duty. That's important. Charlotte says, I remember that stream bugging in and bugging out. That was a good one. I love that one. We'll have to revisit and do a second version of that down the road. Then Martini over on Float, I'm not sure if that's, anyway, they wanted to know, how do you run those lights in an emergency? Off a generator? Do you have a battery set up? So first off, I don't use those yet a whole lot. I do plan on it, although we're going to build an enclosed awning. I don't know what you want to call it. Anyway, the deck I built last summer is going to put a roof over it this summer. And I wouldn't mind running some of those lights up in there, but I'm going to keep some just in case. So, and remember, like I said, a 300 bulb strip of LEDs, if I did my math right, runs less than 20 watts of power. You can get 20 watts from just about anything. You know, a couple little, and I mean cheap little, I don't want to say Dollar Tree solar panels, but a couple of those flimsy little solar panels you can get on Amazon would run them. If you guys have, now this is going to sound like sacrilege, but if you guys use the Milwaukee battery platform for your tools, they have an awesome top-off adapter. I believe it'll run 175 watts. So you could literally run, what, 5 of those strands of lights or more off of a single Milwaukee battery, that would be great. I mean, you're not going to need that many, but 1 or 2 strands, you know, one in your kitchen, one in your living room, one down your hallway, and you could run lighting for your entire main floor of your house off of a Milwaukee battery. So that's an option. Super small generators, almost overkill, but if you have a generator, plug them in that way. And then another way, if you guys know a cigarette lighter, I don't call them that anymore, but what are they? The DC port in your vehicles. You can buy adapters that allow you to pull 75 watts, I believe. I might need to be corrected on that, but 75 watts through that port. So you should be able to run 2 or 3 strands of lights just off a 12 volt adapter in your car. And most vehicles, like my truck, has a 120 volt. Well, yeah, it has a little inverter built in. So a regular old household plug there. It's only good for 75 watts, but yeah, I mean, it wouldn't take much. I'm sure you could run it off the battery off your car without even running your car for a day or two without even having to worry about it. Although I might be exaggerating slightly, but yeah. So thinking outside the box, I'm a huge fan of seasonal purchases. Always buy things afterwards. Oh, this is Acro. I can't remember how to pronounce that. I'm sorry. Vineyard said, this is Sean. Sorry, came in late, but what lights are these? Oh, no worries. So we're talking about, and if you follow me any length of time, I kind of have a seasonal way I post on social media, but I'm a big fan of buying things after the season. So last year I bought an entire lift of salt for like road salt for like 74 cents a bag. You know, you can't store that in every climate, but here in Alberta, you can. Anyway, these are basically what I was talking about here were white. Some people use blue, but white LED Christmas lights. You know, you'll see the mini ones. You'll see the bigger ones. The ones I bought were 300 bulbs, 62 feet long, I believe they were. And I got them for half price. So check out Home Depot, check out Lowe's, check out Walmart, Costco and Sam's Club. I don't know about Sam's Club, but Costco doesn't usually clear out things too much. But any of your big box stores, just take a run through King of the Cheap. I love it. Yeah, absolutely. Take a walk through any of your big box stores and just see. It never hurts. I do it at the end of gardening season. I go through and I look for things like quick release hose connectors, heavy duty spray nozzles. Usually, you know what was really hard this last summer to find was lawn sprinklers. They were expensive and they were almost none to be found. So if I could get some somewhere dirt cheap, I'll buy 10 or 12, throw them in a box and not worry about it. You know, I don't really have a rule of thumb, but if I can buy a bunch of something and not really spend a whole lot of money on it, and it's something I know, the biggest thing for me is making sure it's something I know I'll use. I used to be really bad at that. Oh, it's on clearance. I better buy it. And then you end up having, I don't even know for sure, but like, you know, dirt cheap hoses that are absolute crap to begin with. Buy 5 or 6 of those and, you know, I might have saved 10 bucks, but they're not going to last at all. Hey, Chicken Hawk. Oh, here we go. Chicken Hawk picked up. He said, I got some awesome Christmas extension cords, 40% off. And like I said, nobody's going to care if they're candy cane colored or forest green. If they can run power through them safely, why not save money? Copper's not cheap anymore. So if you can get cheap, you know, if you can buy half price extension cords, why not? So yeah, so take a run through your big box stores, guys, and see what you can. Hey, Chris, Chris Dixon's here as well. You missed your story earlier, so if you didn't hear it, but I told your story of the lady who was trying to bug out with her horse trailer. So run back later and check that out. So yeah, anyway, so here's another one for you guys. I had a random thought the other day. And, you know, in the preparedness community, people are always like, well, you know what I need to do? I need to bury an underground cache because, well, I need to hold on to stuff or I need to be able to find it or I don't want people to know that I have, ammo making supplies, silver, MREs, whatever it is you feel like you have to bury. And I get it, you know, especially if you planned, if you were one of them that thought worst case scenario, I'm going to need to walk 100 miles one way or another. Ha, Chris knows. There he's ahead of me on this one. He says, bad idea in Alberta weather. Yes. Good evening, Brian from the Lots Project. Going to mention you later too, if I remember. So my random thought on this one was simply underground caches are basically useless in Alberta, in any of these cold places for, you know, 4 to 6 months of the year. And what are the chances you're going to need it when the ground is frozen solid? And I can tell you one thing I'm sure as shit not going to do is get out there with an old pickaxe and break through the frost. So here's the thing. Well, I posted that and I get, maybe it came across a little bit negative. And I basically said they're basically useless 6 months of the year. So No Dak Hunter over on Instagram kind of called me out and he's like, so what's the solution? You know, all you're doing is talking about a problem, right? And then he followed up with, I've had the same thought. I live in northern North Dakota, same place that the guys on Zello call Alberta sometimes. We have very deep frost every year. So digging up anything is a moot point for around 4 months of the year. So he's going to have to think about this. So yeah, I'm putting this out here to you guys in the live stream, but also to everybody listening on the recorded podcast later on. What do you think of that? Because I honestly don't have a solution yet. Obviously, you're not going to, you know, put a survival cache or a bug out cache up in a tree or anything like that. What would you do? How do you mitigate the fact that it's not going to be accessible for 6 months of the year? Do you just flip a coin and do you hope that it's successful or that you need it in the warm weather? Or I don't know. Is there, maybe you don't bury it too deep. Here we go. We'll talk this out loud. Maybe you don't bury it at all. Maybe you just put it underground, dig a hole, put it underground, cover it with 3/4 inch pressure treated plywood and then some leaves or some brush over it. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe that's a thought. It's just, to me, burying something under actual physical soil in Alberta just isn't feasible for, like I said, nearly 6 months of the year. Last year, the local rental place won't even rent out gas-powered augers until after Victoria Day weekend. That's May Day weekend, May 24th, 25th, something like that for my American counterparts, because they've had too many people wreck the blades trying to go through the frost in the ground. And if a gas-powered auger has a hell of a time going through frozen soil, well, this old fella here ain't going to be digging through it. So anyway, if anybody has any solutions, post them on social, send them to me through email at therealtimcook@gmail.com and let me know. But yeah, I guess the best thing I can think of so far would be to find a place. And again, here's another problem in Alberta is there's not a whole lot of forest area. So what do you do? I'm not sure. Or maybe you put supplies that aren't expensive, but could be life-saving and you just bury them just below the ground and just cover them with a little bit of brush or something. But even then, if it's winter, you could have like this, you know, some winters we have an open winter, but you know what? Now this isn't actually the worst idea. Okay. Now you're really getting me to think here. So Sunny Land Camper said neighbor's crawl space. Okay. So that could be it. What about maybe an abandoned building, an abandoned barn, putting it up in the upstairs of an abandoned barn? Oh, there we go. See, this is why we crowdsource solutions. Chicken Hawk says a 55-gallon drum in the woods made to look over a tree trunk. I can see that. Absolutely. Why not? Yeah, that would work really well. Here we go. See, this is why I ask you guys as well. Brian says, hollow out the inside of a big round bale and just leave it in the corner of a field. Again, that's great because that's the whole idea behind you'll see a lot of guys build duck blinds for goose hunting, duck hunting, that kind of thing out of a bale of hay, or they make it look like a bale of hay. So yeah, like I love the idea of hiding something in plain sight. So that, yeah, that's not a bad idea either. So yeah, maybe we're going to have to do an entire episode on hiding in plain sight because you know, just because you can't bury something in the ground doesn't mean you can't leave something hidden somewhere. So yeah, I like that, you know, maybe, yeah, or burrow out inside of an old tree, for instance. You know, I remember going back to my uncle's hunting camp all the time. The long walk was on a straight path, but if you missed the turn off to the camp, you could go a long ways in the wrong direction on the same road. And the marker to the path was always this great big tree that a feller could actually climb into the base of it because it was like two trees that grew up together, or maybe it was like a hollowed out base. I don't know anyway, but something like that too. So yeah, good ideas, guys. I appreciate that very much. And to go back to, I know it was a little tongue in cheek here, but Sunny Land Camper said a neighbor's crawl space. Well, again, depending on how far you have to bug out, and if you ever plan on doing it on foot, something like this might be an option. Like, you know, hey, could I leave this in your garage just in case? Or maybe you could find a dirt cheap storage locker that you could keep stuff in, you know, a few, like 100 miles away, or I don't know. Anyway, just an idea, but yes, thinking outside the box. Now Vineyards here, Acero, I hope that's right. Anyway, Vineyards said, I used 4-inch pipe that looks like it's for the sewer in the house, but it's loaded with freedom seeds. I like that idea too. And I suppose instead of burying a cache lengthways, you could bury it height as well, up and down, and leave the lid exposed or really close. But again, the only problem with that for us would be if it got buried in a foot of snow, but that's less likely than having to deal with frost. So yeah, I like that idea. Maybe I think we'll have to do an entire episode on survival caches and things like that, because this just got me thinking. And another thing, while we're talking and discussing, I didn't even have this in my notes, but again, the other day I was out back and I was looking around, and someday I would love to put underground water storage here. Some sort of, I don't know, like just, you know, like a rain catchment system or something like that. Now, take this for what it is, but I had this idea. I looked and we have a hot tub there. And I thought, well, you know, it's not a pool, but in absolute worst case scenario, there's quite a bit of usable water there. My only concern is, and I think I'm going to have to email the Berkey company, but I'm pretty sure filtering hot tub water through a Berkey would make it drinkable. Now, this is absolutely not advice. I'm spitballing here with you guys again, but I was thinking outside the box, water storage, what can a person do? Because the big thing up here, once again, 6 months of the year, anything outdoors is going to be frozen. And the hot tub is automatically, hey, Justin, how are you? 30-day reviews. Make sure to hit the like button. Appreciate that very much. Yeah, so Sunnyland Camper says Berkey Blacks would work. I've got two of them in my Berkey right now, so I'm sure that would work. And Brian says it doesn't take much to cover a 4-inch pipe. And that is true, man. That is absolutely true. So, yeah, there's all kinds of thoughts there. But, yeah, I figured, as far as stored water, usable water, even if you needed it for like washing up or flushing the toilet or whatever it happens to be, the water's there. So why not use it, right? So here's another one. Josh G over on Float sent me a message and said, I got a couple of 5-gallon containers of gasoline that are too old to use. I had used fuel stabilizer on them initially, but got busy. He put quotations around that, not mine, and forgot to cycle through the gas. What's the best way to get rid of these? Well, first off, thank you for being honest. Nobody's perfect. And there's been plenty of times that I've left gas around that has just, you know, I should have dealt with it. I should have rotated it. I should have. You know what? That can be a problem in the prepper community. We always sometimes bite off more than we can chew. And sometimes we forget things that we should have done. So not a big deal. Hey, and stop right here. Jake from Ravenwood, we just talked about you not long ago. He said, hey, Tim, finally made it to one of your live streams. I'm a big fan of pre-positioned supply, i.e. friends, family, house, or retreat property. Well, that, Jake, I was going to email you later on. I would love to have you on sometime. I'm not sure how it works where you are, because Jake is a long ways away right now working for a very important job. But anyway, I'd love to have you on some evening for an interview, because this would be something a lot of fun to talk about. But yeah, so yes, the whole idea of pre-positioned supply, having something at a friend's house or a family's house, like you said, or a retreat property, that's a great idea. Going back again to my uncle's hunting camp, we used to have, you know, first off, we had stuff in the camp. Well, we never locked the door, because if somebody wanted to get in, we might as well just let them through the door, because if they bust the door down, they're just going to wreck things anyway. Number two, we didn't have anything around that was valuable. So if somebody wanted to take some of the old stuff, okay. We did have a breakdown 12-gauge shotgun that was underneath folding the hide-a-bed or whatever. That was about it. But if we ever had anything expensive, we would actually hide that outside somewhere, or, you know, kind of bury it or build it a place to hide it. So just some thoughts, but yes, that I love that. Yeah. Thanks, Jake. I appreciate you dropping in and giving us some feedback on that. So back to the old gas. So you guys might've followed me this summer. I attempted to, well, I bought a 100-gallon fuel storage tank, and you know what? I just wasn't happy with the system. I put a lot of work into that, and sometimes you just got to cut your losses. So I've got it for sale now. I've gone back to my 5-gallon jugs, because for me, it's easier to load them, unload them, cycle them, treat them, the whole works. Now, something I ran into was the fuel kind of got gummy. And I washed and washed and washed that the big 100-gallon tank. And no matter how hard I tried, junk still got through. Even with the filter on there, junk got through. To the point where I was heading out to mow one night with my zero-turn mower, and it literally clogged off the fuel line because there was like solidified gel in the fuel. So I basically lost about 15 gallons of fuel that way. And I had no way to get rid of it. I called my local MD, municipal district. We have a place where we can get rid of hazardous waste and stuff. And they really didn't want the gasoline. So I thought, okay, what can we do? So back to the question at hand. So what can you do with old fuel? Depending on how old it is or how nasty it is, if you got a really old vehicle or some lawn equipment, you can like add 10% of the fuel capacity with old fuel and burn it off that way, slow and steady. I don't love the idea. I wouldn't put it in my Ram 1500. I wouldn't want to take a chance on that. But if it was old, an old vehicle, that kind of thing, go for it. And 30-day reviews, absolutely. Fire pit. So he added LOL to that, but it is true. So my very second solution here, and this is the one we ended up using, was use it to burn an old brush pile. So for me, I needed to get rid of the gas, and I'm obviously not going to go dump it in the dirt or anything like that, but it was in three of my good 5-gallon gas cans. So my brother-in-law said, well, we got a big brush pile out at the farm that needs to be burned. I'll use the fuel there. And it worked. That's where it went. He took it out, dumped it, burnt it, and then brought me back my gas can. So that made me happy. Like I said, if you live in an area that has hazardous waste pickup, a lot of times you can get rid of it that way. Now, here's the other one, and you guys will see coming up in the next little while, I'm going to have a video on fuel stabilizers. I've been doing quite a bit of research into them because you guys know I've always been a huge fan of Seafoam. Love Seafoam, but it's damned expensive. And I had kind of forgot a while back about this one particular fuel stabilizer. I think Stephen Harris actually used to recommend it quite a bit, and it's called PRI-G. So I've been doing quite, I don't want to spoil the video, but it's really the only fuel stabilizer on the market that claims that its additives will bring old gas back to life. So it's something to look at. It's something I am going to talk about down the road. That's all I can say. I'm not even sure how I'm going to test fuel stabilizer, but at least I can do a, you know, manufacturer claim comparison, that kind of stuff. So we got a few things here. 30-day review says a lot of hunting cabins are open also for emergency use by people that might need them. However, their bears around a lot will be nailed shut. So yeah, perfect. Good example. Yes, if you're lost in the woods and you come across a cabin, don't be shy. Use it. I want to say it's up in northern Manitoba where people have to leave their vehicles unlocked by law just so you can escape polar bears. Not exactly sure where, but Sunny Landscape, Sunny Land Camper says good old ethanol. So that's a whole nother kettle of fish, another bucket of worms, or whatever you want to call it. I'm going to deal with that in that video. But yeah, ethanol definitely has shortened the life of fuel for the most part. And most of the major stabilizers talk about ethanol. Some say they're better than others. We'll deal with that down the road. So Chris says there's always oil in new tanks and it takes a long time to get it out of there. Yeah, I think that's what happened with me. It used to be a diesel tank from a farm. This one was, and it was in perfect shape, but it just didn't matter. There was no way I could get some of that gunk out of there. And so anyway, if you're looking at fuel tanks, think long and hard before you buy a used one. And like I said, or a new one for that matter. 30-day review says, if you're planning to burn it, do it safely and don't add a fire. It started from the container. So when I was a kid, we used to have, I don't even know where Dad got it, but it was a green bench out back and I used to like to play on it. It had to have come from some, I don't know. I don't even know. I asked Dad the other day when I was back east and he couldn't remember where it came from, but it was basically like an old park bench that was green, except it didn't look like a park bench. And I used to play on it. Anyway, one time Dad used to soak his paintbrushes in gasoline because that's what we used to do in the 80s, right? And of course, you know what he used was a plastic gallon ice cream container, an empty one. So it would sit there for time on end. And I was maybe 10 or 11 and I got thinking one day, I'm like, wonder what happened if I lit that on fire. So in the house. I went and got some matches. And if mom and dad are listening to this, they probably still don't know I ever did this. Threw a match in on top of that. And I thought, hey, that's pretty cool. It's just sitting there burning right nice. Well, you know what happens when when plastic gets hot and it melts and the gasoline goes everywhere. And then all of a sudden, what was a nice contained fire all of a sudden goes down over the bench and all in the grass. And the only thing that saved me, of course, well, number one was I wasn't close enough to get it on me. And number two, the grass was really green. So it didn't hurt things too bad, but yeah. So he said, and yeah, 30 day review says, yes, we only did that in the '80s. Yeah. It just seemed that things were, more open back then. And Brian from Lots Project, and this man is an expert on petroleum-based products. I think he knows as much about petroleum as Hank Hill knew about propane. But he says ethanol is the biggest scam around. And yeah, maybe we'll have you on some evening just to talk about fuel. That'd be a lot of fun. So yeah, from there, I thought I'd share. Let's not go into that. Brian says water bonds with the ethanol and drops it out of the fuel, drops the octane level and causes all sorts of shit in engines. It's just not quality. Exactly. Like I don't know all the ins and the outs of it, but thank you, Brian. I appreciate that because yeah, it's everybody you talk to says like, if you can get ethanol free fuel, get it. And most of your states, even our province, if you look it up online, most places will have directories where you can get ethanol free fuel. And for me, I think the closest one is like 2 hours away. So that kind of sucks. I'm not going to go get it and bring it back. But anyway, so next I wanted to share with you guys, and this was kind of cool, where some, what do they say? You can never go home again. I wanted to share some of my thoughts about going back home. And I hope you enjoy this because you guys know I grew up on the East Coast and I've lived in Alberta for nearly a decade now. And I hadn't been home in almost, or well, this is home now, but I had never been back to Nova Scotia in almost 5 years. So a lot of my family out there I hadn't seen. So it was kind of weird. It was like going back to a place that you recognize, but it just didn't feel like home anymore. And that's okay. But a few things. First things, and I got to tell this to anybody who might be nervous about, if you've ever had a friend that you haven't talked to in a metric shit ton long time, and you think, you know what, it's been too long, I've been too much of a dick, I can't talk to him. Well, talk to him. If they have been your best friend or a close friend for a lot of years, it doesn't matter how long it's been, they'll talk to you. And my best friend, Danny, I never even told him I was going home. I wanted to wait till I got there and message him, but he obviously caught it on Facebook. I stopped out to his store one day to find him, missed him. He wasn't there, but within 20 minutes, he messaged me. He never saw me, but we were on the same wavelength to get together, and we hadn't talked in like 4 years. And I felt guilty for that. So I'm just saying, if there's somebody you haven't reached out to in a long time, somebody you're close to and you haven't done it, just do it. It's worth it. I got out there and we had a few beer and we spent 5 hours talking and it felt like 5 minutes. I wish I had more time. I didn't get back a second time to see him. And hopefully it won't be another 5 years before I see him again, because it was just awesome. Another thought is, you know what? There's no right or wrong choice. And for a long time, I used to think, I hated the fact that we had to move all the way across country to do good things. And, you know, there's no right or wrong answer. You're going to do what you're going to do for you. And there's going to be good and bad, whether you stay somewhere, whether you go somewhere. So just remember that it's okay. If you're looking at doing something and making a change, sometimes you got to leave some people behind to get on and do things a lot better. When I went home, you noticed the changes. You know, one of my good friends, the house he grew up in had been torn down. Some houses were more dilapidated. Some had more, you know, they were dirtier, dingier. You always noticed the people who got older. You know, that kind of stuff. You just notice the changes. It was just a thought that came to my head. And I don't, if you guys ever see, there's a meme online that says cousins were always your first friends, your best friends. And when I was a kid, my dad, you know, he came from a family of 9 brothers and sisters and cousins we always played with. Well, my girls, they don't have a lot of cousins. And the few that they do, 3 of what they do have are back East. And you know, it was cool. I loved it. Anyway, I got to tell you this because they got together with their 3 other cousins, my twins did, and they played hide and seek every single night. It didn't matter if it was freezing cold, if it was wet snow, if it was hot, If the ground was wet, they went out and played every single night we were there. And it blessed my heart and it broke my heart. So yeah. And the last thought that I've had, and not everybody finds this, but for whatever reason, I got to say, traveling brings me closer to my family. I don't know if it's something about, you know, even though you're always together at home, you're always having something to do. But when you're traveling as a family, whether it's a car road trip or flying or whatever, it just, for me, it is some of my most fond memories of time with my wife and time with my kids. So anyway, those are my thoughts. I want to catch up with you guys here too. Know Your Joe, he asks, how long will fuel typically last with stabilizer mixed in it? Now Chris Dixon says, most claim up to 24 months. And that's what I found doing my research. And then Brian from Lots Project, like I said, he's the Hank Hill of petroleum-based products, says it really depends on a lot of things. So the answer is it depends. I kind of figured that, but fuel quality, storage condition, container type, rotate it and don't worry about it. And that, my friends, is a good answer. John says, use ethanol out for small engine fuel. I got to look up that product. I got to remember that. I'm going to save a screenshot of this and we'll do some digging later on, because that sounds like just the fact, I love the name alone. So yeah, if anybody else has any thoughts on ethanol out, or Brian, if you're in here and you have any thoughts, send them my way too, or send them our way. Letty Lou, I want to say it was Letty Lou the other day, asked me on Telegram what kind of lighting I use for my videos. Well, down here in the dungeon that is my office, you guys have probably seen the videos before, but all I use is 100-watt LED light bulb above me. But out in the workshop, in the studio area, I use it's called a Mount Dog Softbox Lighting Kit. And if you guys have seen Joseph Millison here quite often, he's a fellow YouTube content creator, and he recommended it to me. It's like $50, and it's a stand with a light box and a diffuser panel on the front, and you get two 95-watt compact fluorescent bulbs that go in there. And for me, they have a tripod with them. They're awesome. They are technically portable, but they work great for studio lighting. So if you guys are looking, you know, for up-and-coming content creators, or just looking to make the lighting in your videos a little bit better, that's what I use. Yeah, what else do we have for you guys? This was just something that I believe it's Chad over at Telcatcha Farms. It was one post that I missed on all the Y2K stuff, and I just wanted to share it with you. He said, Tom Petty once said one of the lines from Crawling Back to You sums him up the best. Most things I worry about never happen anyway. I think it could be rephrased as, most of us worry about the wrong things. In other words, our crystal balls are shit. And ain't that the truth? If anybody suffers from anxiety, or you're just a worrier in general, just remember, 99% of the stuff we worry about never turns out to be anything. It's a nothing burger. And this goes back to Amy Dingman's podcast a little while ago, where she was talking about how many things that we lose so much sleep over that just never amount to anything. And he was using this talking about Y2K, but you can absolutely take that concept and run with it. And just remember, our crystal balls are shit. That is incredible wisdom. I loved it. I had to share it with you. If you guys have seen, we've had a lot of snow here, and I've had some trouble with snow on my solar panels. And actually, I haven't done a follow-up video yet, because I had to send my inverter back because it started acting all kinds of weird. The voltage was all over the place. There was something wrong with it. So I ordered a different brand, a better one, and it got all the way to Alberta, and the shipping company turned around and sent it back on December 14th. So I now have no inverter for my solar system, still waiting on something. I don't know what I'll do there, but anyway. So I've had an issue with snow building up on my solar panels. And for now, I've been able to use like a roof rake or that sort of thing to clean it off. But Catalyst over on Float mentioned using Turtle Wax or Rain-X. And I was wondering again if anybody else had any suggestions, or if anybody, you know, suggests that might be a good or bad idea. But I'm going to do some tests with that and see if it'll help it slide off. Because I've got basically a 45-degree slope on them. That's what's recommended here in Alberta. And the snow is still sticking. And part of that's probably because the panels are black and they heat up a little bit. And I don't know. Anyway, I'm just wondering what you guys think, but I'm going to do some testing on the two solar panels, try a couple of different products. Brian says, check out midnight solar for inverter. I will, because Amazon's been pissing me off and it's time to look for something a little bit better. And Brian says, talking about ethanol, he says you can mix it with water and then the ethanol drops out, but it will drop the octane level as well as with the ethanol out. So you have to buy higher octane than you need. So I suppose you'd buy Supreme. Anyway, that sounds like a bit of a process. I've seen a couple of videos on people doing that, but yeah, that's kind of cool. That'll be a project for down the road for sure. Something else I hadn't, since I've switched back to all the 5-gallon gas jugs, the biggest problem I have, and I use the Scepter brand. I believe they're available in the US as well. I really like it. We are one of the few areas that I think we're over the United States on is we never had to deal with them damn EPA rated gas jugs that you guys have. We still have our normal ones up here, although for a while they did away with the back vent and just added a second hose or a second nozzle in the nozzle itself. Nothing really changed. But my biggest problem is the rubber gaskets that go around the inside end of the nozzle tend to wear out really quick, and they tend to roll off and swell up and leak and crack and all of that. So I started looking for some better ones. And of course, because I forget that there's lots of good experts in the workshop community, I went in alone, I did some research, and I ended up finding a company out of New Jersey called Captain O-Ring, and they supposedly make some really good products. But again, if I'd have thought about it for 5 minutes, I would have sent a quick PM to Brian, and he would have come back to me and said, what you really need is a product, and I'm not sure if this is the name of the product or the material it's made out of, but it's Viton, V-I-T-O-N, because he sent me that on social media after I posted about these O-rings. So I got to find some of those as well, and we'll do a side-by-side comparison and see how things hold up. Sunny Land Camper says, so I so have to rebuild my solar rack when I get back to the Ozarks. So, and Brian says that it is the material, Viton, V-I-T-O-N. So I'll do some research and get back to you. And if Brian, if you got any more on that too, that's cool. Let's turn it into the petroleum show. This is great. one other, this was completely off the wall and completely different. I don't know how many of you guys are movie watchers, but I'm a huge movie buff. And I promise I'll never turn this into the Toolman Tim movie review hour, but I wouldn't mind. I'm also a sucker for post-apocalyptic fiction, like audiobooks and movies and that kind of stuff. And the other night, the wife and I sat down, we were looking for something good to watch. And this might not be up everybody's alley, but we watched Don't Look Up on Netflix. And it is about a couple of astronomers who discover a comet that's going to decimate the Earth, completely destroy it. And it is most certainly an apocalyptic film. It's also full of satire. If you guys have ever heard Jack talk about Idiocracy, I want to say that movie was made by the South Park creators, and it is an absolute satire of the modern human condition. Sunny Land Camper says, great show. And yeah, so to me, the critics didn't love this, Don't Look Up. Yeah, and Justin says, just watched it yesterday. And are you talking about Don't Look Up? I think that it's an underappreciated film right now. It's made by a really good director. And I think down the road, it's going to have a lot to say about society right now. But anyway, a few thoughts that I had watching it, because to me, whenever I watch something like that, I think, okay, how much better could they have been prepared? How much better would it have been if I was a prepper in that situation? What am I going to deal with? And like I said, the film might not be for everybody, but the biggest takeaway that I came out of this movie was the whole damn world is distracted. It was like these people watched it, they were so busy looking at their phones or looking at celebrities or talking about whatever it happened to be that it didn't matter it didn't matter that the entire world was going to be destroyed by a comet. They were too busy looking down, looking everywhere else. And obviously that satire hitting you right over the head, but that's the worst thing we can be, is distracted, looking at something else, not paying attention to what we should have. So if our head's in the right place, sometimes we can see it. And I think they probably felt a little bit like Noah, you know, hollering at everybody. Everybody standing there saying, oh, I'm good, I'm good, I'm good, I'm good, you know. And then the rain's coming up to their neck and they're like, I'm good, I'm good, I'm good, right? And in this case, it's the, what are the Kardashians doing or whatever else. Yeah, Brian said I was wrong on the Idiocracy. Mike Judge and from Beavis and Butthead, and of course King of the Hill. That's right. Yeah. So and Know Your Joe said I almost watched Don't Look Up. Was planning on watching later tonight. Well, I will not give you any spoilers here, but the whole concept, like I said, is these two astronomers, they find out that there is a comet coming to Earth, and they go and talk to the president. And this is all in the preview, so I'm not ruining anything. And the president basically just laughs them off. And then they go to the news, and the news laughs them off. So that's where I'll leave it. And it is long. Yeah, it's like 2.5 hours long. So, and it does feel long. The guy that made this, I'm pretty sure is the same director that did like The Big Short and the Dick Cheney movie. I can't remember which one that was. But anyway, so looking at it, and you start to see humanity unravel or deal with things. And there was five types of people in there. There was the ones that keep living like normal. They buried their head in the sand and they said, you know what? This will pass. This too will pass. Well, you know what? That's good and well if it's not, you know, a world ending. And of course, this is, you know, I'm being a little facetious here. But if it's a legit emergency, burying your head in the sand is going to do you no good. Look at the people at Hurricane Katrina that said, you know what? It's never been that bad before. I'll stay at home. And they ended up, you know, drowning in their attic. So that is, you know, don't bury your head in the sand, right? The second ones were people looking for pleasure absolutely anywhere. You know, the guys that were getting drunk or stoned or, you know, whatever else. And that was just another form of distraction, just a way to deal with it. Then there were the ones that tried to fix it. It was almost like in denial, but you know what? There is, I mean, you can be that type of person. I tend to be a fixer. If there's a real bad solution or a real bad emergency at that time, I do what I can. And I, you know, try to fix it. Right. Then, then there is, I don't want to go into this part too much, but there was somebody, of course, that tried to make money off it. And we talked about that in the Y2K show, where we talked about how there was a Y2K preparedness store in every mall back in the day. And yeah, so that's just an idea. But can you make money off something like that and still be a good person? Absolutely. However, quite often it does seem that some of those people try to take advantage of those disasters. And that's kind of what happens in this. So, and then the other ones, of course, were the turn to religion. And there's nothing wrong with that either. But that was just the five people. They saw this comet coming toward Earth. They knew that things were going to be really, really bad. And it was just a really cool case study on seeing how different people handled different things. And another thought I had in the whole thing is, no matter how hard the government tries to hold it all together, it's going to fall apart. It's just a matter of when. And if you're prepped ahead of time, you can handle so, so, so much more. I enjoyed it. I really like the movie a lot. I like satire. A lot of people said it was heavy-handed and, you know, it was too obvious. But how else do you do something like that in this day and age? Because if your satire is not obvious, the average moviegoer is not going to get it. And I guess the critics didn't get it either. So Justin said, not surprised it had that it got bad reviews. They refused to see the irony in the videos. And it is long, 2 hours, 25 minutes. And Know Your Joe says, I fear that Idiocracy is almost a crystal ball. Hope that ball is broken. Welcome to Costco. I love you. Right? Is that how that goes? Or welcome to Walmart? Anyway, and then Sunny Landscaper says, come to think of it, I fell asleep at the end or before the end. But yeah, I love a good satire, and I think what's really good about that kind of stuff is it's like a mirror. And that's how good comedy, when people are allowed to say what they feel like they should be able to say, good comedy holds up a mirror to people and says, look, we're stupid. Do you see how dumb we are? We need to fix this. So anyway, and that's what a good satire movie does. But I really enjoyed this, and I might, you know, once a month, I might do a little segment of a, you know, either a post-apocalyptic book I've read or, you know, just prepper lessons from something I've watched or consumed, because I'm sure there's enough people out there that, you know, enjoy movies and enjoy media that it's kind of fun to talk about. And it's fun to pull lessons out of that stuff too. So, and if you guys have suggestions for other movies that you like or that are prepper minded, I would love to hear from you guys about it too. So yeah, that was pretty much all I had. We had, like I said, we had a great time going out east. It was great, but it was also great to get home and spend time with the family. You know, I actually took almost 3 weeks off from making any content per se. I had basically 3 weeks of podcasts put up, and I got to say, guys, I really appreciate the support. The podcasts, they went like this for a long time, and now they're going way up. So for those of you who are on the audio only, of course, yeah, the views, the listens are trending up, and I am excited. I want this to turn into something so friggin' huge that we don't know what to do with, you know? But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But I just, for everybody who's listening, it just seems to be getting picked up more and more and more. Know Your Joe says, I have found that a lot of people live in the now with no regard to potential upcoming issues. Why do something now when you can panic later? Or when the government can come and help me, right? But you're absolutely right. And oh, I love this one. Brian says, sometimes I feel like I'm going to end up like Woody Harrelson in 2012. Yes, I don't even know. Right? Woody Harrelson's the guy that he's in the van living up on a hill, and he's got all the government secrets up on the wall, and he's like, look, this connects to this, and this connects to that. And he's like, was it an Alex Jones kind of figure too? He's got a radio, or he's got a podcast. Hey, what? Anyway, but yeah, you know, a lot of times we feel like we're the only ones that can see problems, but don't fall under the trap of being pessimistic. Use it to motivate you. Use it to, you know, if you're going to be Woody Harrelson in 2012, yes, he has his RV already, but if you're going to be Woody Harrelson in 2012, go down swinging, man, get out there, share your thoughts. And most people aren't going to listen, right? Like you said, most people are going to have their head in the sand. But it always used to be common sense to prep. It always used to be common sense to be just a little bit prepared. And I don't mean looking for a ghost behind every corner. I don't mean, you know, being an absolute idiot about things. And I don't mean shoving that kind of shit down people's throat either. I just mean be practical about it. Look at what is most likely to happen to you on an individual family basis, and then prepare for those things. And then look at the next things that might be a little less likely, but more likely than a comet hitting the earth. And then prepare for those things. And who was in here the other night? Pappy Cannoli was talking about being Mormon and how one of the big reasons that they love to have a big stockpile of food on hand is so that they can help other people when they're in need during bad times like that. And you know what? Whether we say it or we don't say it, that's a big portion of prepping as well. Because again, you don't have to go out and fight the masses and the hordes and all that. It's just nice to have things on hand. And it's nice to be able to help people out, to throw people a package of toilet paper when you can't get it in the store, right? And I don't know about you guys, and I don't know if you're seeing this like we are. And part of it's being in a small town, but our grocery store is short on friggin' everything right now. And I hate it. I absolutely hate it. When you go an hour out of town to the bigger cities, things seem to be a lot better. The stores are more well-stocked, but we're kind of at the very end. We're like the last town before Saskatchewan. So the truck route comes all the way down, hits all the small stores before it comes to ours last. And so a lot of times they just stock it up for what they have and they bring it out. But my wife was at the store tonight, and part of it's probably the holidays too, but there was no meat, almost no produce, and the prices keep going up. So what do they say? Buy it at today's prices so you don't have to deal with it tomorrow. And to me, that's practical preparedness, right? Sunny Landscaper says, y'all have a good week. Going to go back and see where I fell asleep during that movie, 73. Absolutely. And Know Your Joe says, the Lots Project, it would seem to me you might be better suit it with a long-range twin engine aircraft. And absolutely, he says, oh, I want to ride that super volcanic eruption. There was a book a while back I read about, if anybody knows this book, I don't know. Anyway, he was a hermit. He ended up getting married and moved into like as far north BC as you could. Like you had to walk like 2 hours to get there. And the guy ended up building his own airplane from scratch. He had to get it certified and everything so that he could fly to the market, bring produce, that kind of stuff. They even, I want to say it was like up on a mountain, and they completely you know, made their entire area self-sustainable. They walked cows and everything in. It's an incredible read. I had it lent to me years ago by a contractor that I worked for. He said, you'd really like this. And I think it was something like The Hermit of Something Gulch, or I don't know, it was a green book. But if I can find it, I will at least put it in the show notes down the road, because it's a really cool kind of story. I liked it. And Chris says, our little IGA, and that's what we have here, Independent Grocers Association, is fairly empty, and we're on the main highway north and south. It's just, it's not good right now. And I'm not doom and gloom at all. Oh, here we go. And Justin says, no shortages here. However, saltines on the low end for a small box is $3.85. On the high end, $4.95. I don't know, like, that's got to be, it's a huge, that's a big price increase. And we've been noticing it too. Like, I mean, things like strawberries and stuff. And I know, obviously, it's not a necessity to have strawberries, but the prices have damn near doubled for some of that stuff. So it's going to get to the point where a person just has to have their, you know, their necessities, and don't worry about the rest of it for now. And I think what you're seeing does seem to be these kind of scattered, kind of random shortages everywhere. Like, of course, we had a cereal shortage because, was it Kellogg's or whatever, their union went on strike. Then we had a cat food shortage because Whiskas had a recall. And then Whiskas also makes a whole bunch of store brand stuff. So that all got recalled. And so then, of course, the other brands were still there, and the people who couldn't get Whiskas bought up the rest of the other brands. And it's just like, oh, anyway, makes you tired thinking about it, right? But yeah, I don't know if anybody has any other comments or questions, throw them in there. But going forward, it's going to be a good week. We've got Thursday coming up is going to be the first preparedness episode of 2022. I almost said 2020. Don't know where that came from. And it's going to be a good one. We're going to talk about home heating systems, what can go wrong, what we can fix, what to keep on hand, and the whole works. So I'm pretty excited about that. And next Sunday, here back in the workshop again, we're going to have Tom from the Small Scale Life podcast. He's one of the fellow co-creators over on the Fireside Freedom Chat as well. We haven't exactly nailed down what we're going to talk about, but I know we're going to talk about his journey in moving and the good things that are going to happen this year, and starting small businesses and all of that. But keep an eye out. I will post a thumbnail and a video link just to let you know what's going on. Anyway, guys, that's it. Just over an hour tonight. It was awesome. I love you guys dropping in. I seriously missed you. I don't think I finished my thought earlier, but I was almost 3 weeks where I didn't make any content. And about a week and a half in, I was starting to get antsy and wanting to get back on here and chat with you. So anyway, guys, that's it for me this evening. As always, stay happy, stay healthy, and have a great week.